Sable City Council Organizational Committee will come to order. Welcome, friends, and council staff, and Emma. Hi. It was a friend, yeah. So this is the first of many org committee meetings and Wednesday morning meetings we'll have this year, following up on our priorities that we teased out of last year's budget, things that we're looking for follow-up on. And today is sort of a softball because we're starting with our org committee and not one of the follow-up meetings. But Holly has worked very hard to get our follow-up scheduled and to fill in our committees with things that just pertain to the council that we can follow up on. So we have a big day in front of us. I believe our public hearing is one item, which will be two items, but it should be reasonable. So we will get rocking and rolling here today and maybe get some breathing space as we move forward into the day. So let's start out. So we're going to hear about the business awards. We're going to talk about the 2020 inaugural planning, should any of us be here. We still have to plan it. Discussion on about public comment in the legislative files, and then updates on our boards, committees, commissions. And I want to remind people as we're going through this today to think about committees, commissions, boards, and how those are shaping up for people. I know that there's some that we are on voluntarily, some that we're on because it's required, some of them where we could send staff members in our place. And so we just should make sure that we are balancing our workload and those other committee and commission and board responsibilities, because I think the worst thing to do is be on a board and not go. So let's start with business awards. We'll start out with, if you want to just introduce yourself and then give us the update.
Sure thing. Thank you, Councilmember Brenmoen and fellow council members. As many of you already know, my name is Sam, and I am the business and communications intern working on the 2019 St. Paul Business Awards. Today, I'm just going to be running through what we've done so far in this past month and a half or so, and then running through the nomination process, the nomination results, and then what's going forward with our selection committee and the awards reception culminating on April 11th. So, as you all know, this is the third year of the St. Paul Business Awards, and we started accepting nominations on January 14th, and these nominations ran for 5 weeks, and through these 5 weeks, we allowed residents and businesses both to submit their nominations for who they feel best represents the best local businesses that St. Paul has to offer. And after these 5 weeks, which was February 15th, we allowed 2 weeks for businesses to complete their nominations. And this required them to fill out a nomination form on their end, along with submitting a logo to us. So the promotion of these awards, we worked with council members, public information officers, department staff, and business associations to promote these business awards, whether that was through Facebook, Twitter, any other social media posting. And we provided weekly updates as to how we were doing with the business awards, and then providing them with a template of what we would, what we feel must be stressed to in order to best promote these awards throughout the weeks. So the results of these awards, we actually ended up with 75 total forms submitted, and we have 18 businesses who have completed their applications. And we actually have plenty of ineligible nominees as well, whether that is because they are outside of city limits, they are nonprofits, or they are past winners as well.
Do you want me to go back?
Sure. And I just wanted to say that businesses from each ward have completed a nomination, and we actually have Ward 2 having 5 businesses represented within that ward.
Ms. Naker.
First of all, I just really appreciate your professional work on this, Sam, and how thorough you've been. Having the data is really cool to see, and I know that takes a lot of work. Can you explain, I'm just looking at, as we make this program better every year and use the data to inform how we run it, week 5 seems like an amazing week for our nominations. Was that actually the deadline week?
Yep, that was the deadline week.
Okay. So week 6 was another week.
I think it's definitely a big combination of all of the council members really making a push to promote these awards in the last week, along with many of the staff here as well filling out nomination forms. I think that really is what contributed to the spike in week five.
Football three.
So we have already organized the selection committee for this year's awards. The selection committee will consist of 7 members. They are all either past winners from last year or they served on the selection committee last year as well. We are set to meet on March 15th from noon to 1:30, and during this meeting we will be deciding the winners and runner-ups for these business awards, and we will be deciding 6 businesses, 3 winners and 3 runner-ups, 1 for each award. And here are the selection committee members, and then here are just their names and the businesses that they represent. So,
Ms. Anker,
thank you. For the runners up, will they be officially acknowledged, or is that sort of if the winner doesn't end up being able to accept or come, or?
Yep. Thank you, Councilmember Brenmoen and Councilmember Anker. So, the runner ups will be because. Once we have decided the winners, we will be vetting them to see if they are eligible to first then receive the award, and then the runner-ups will be notified if that's not the case. So what's next? So we will be working with So we will be myself, Nia, and Shari, I believe, will be working with Nick Nelson from Media Services to produce a video for this year's awards. We will be interviewing, we will be gathering testimonies from businesses and local residents to help define what these business awards are all about and what they mean for local businesses throughout the city. And we will also be hopefully spreading, we will be looking to spread information about these awards either through press releases or communicating with other members throughout the city. And continuing, as I had spoken about before, that selection committee meeting will be coming up next Friday on March 15th, and then we will be holding our final awards reception where we will acknowledge the winners on April 11th.
And that's a Thursday?
No, it's the 10th.
The 10th on Wednesday. My apologies. And then now I would like to just open it up to the Councilmember Brenmoen and the council members to just give us any suggestions moving forward, what you'd like done for the awards reception, any sort of questions or concerns that you may have.
Mr. Brenmoen.
I would just like to know, is that, can we see the list of the nominations that were made?
Most certainly, I will send that out to, I will send that out to all the council members as soon as I can.
Yes.
And then my only question would be that, so the awards presentation, will that be at the 3:30 or 5:30 portion of the meeting on the 10th?
It will be at the 3:30 portion of the meeting.
Okay. Great. Ms. Anker.
Thank you. I think one of the trouble spots in last year's ceremony was just that, you know, depending on who's going to be doing what and saying what, we want to have that kind of run of show and script ready, you know, I would say a week ahead of time would be great, just so we have time to look it over, give feedback on what we're going to be doing and saying. So that would be my only kind of suggestion from other years.
Yeah, it's important because I think if we're reading something out loud, it's good to have an opportunity to put it into your own voice and to make sure that it's the correct business.
Accurate.
Yeah, accurate, et cetera. So that I second that. I really would appreciate seeing that a week in advance.
As Councilmember Maker said earlier, the runner-ups, I think to get community involvement, if we can get those lists or if we can make a press release on the runner-ups, that way we can put it in our Facebooks and we can push out this initiative so people can take part of it next year as well. So getting more PR for it. It's a great program. It's a great award. We need everybody to be excited about it.
Ms. Anker.
Thank you. I agree with that. And so I think to echo that, the promotion actually for the award presentation itself, trying to get not only press releases out, but trying to get those business associations to come and bring their members and sort of talk about this as not just for the recipients, but for, this is a way for your organization to show your support for businesses in St. Paul, because that's really what we're celebrating here. It's not just about, you know, you won or you didn't win. I agree. Mm-hmm. It would be great to have a packed house.
Yes.
And Yeah, thank you, Councilmember Furman and council members. I will most certainly provide a script as soon as I can, definitely a week or more in advance. Hopefully, I would appreciate any sort of feedback just to help craft a script in your own voice, I think. It's a big thing.
Great. Well, thank you. This has felt very professional, and it's been fun to support your work, and I look forward to this coming together in April.
Thanks, Sam. Thank you. It's really great work.
Thank you.
And then I just have one more slide then.
That's just a
thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for this opportunity. I appreciate my. I've really enjoyed my last month and a half out here. So thank you.
Cool.
That's very good.
All right. Let's move on to 2020. Who's in charge?
I'll take this one.
Okay.
Council members. 2020 inauguration planning has begun. I think the main thing to know, it will be Tuesday, January 7th at 4:30. The plan is to do something similar to the 2016 inauguration, where there'll be the ceremony and then an appetizer reception with cash bar afterwards. As far as location, we've secured the Ordway, so it'll be at the Ordway again. And currently we're working to contract with United Solutions, Kristen McMullen, to be our fundraiser for the event. This year we ran out of food last time, so we're planning a slightly larger budget to increase the amount of food, and then as well as it's been 4 years, so some inflation costs. So we're looking to fundraise $30,000 this year for the inauguration. Other than that, all the other details will be coming down the pipe as we get closer, like the cater, the invitations, program, music, name badges. Those are the smaller details. So right now we've really secured the location, the date, and working on fundraising. So if there's any concerns or questions or feedback that you want to make sure that we include as we continue to plan, you can tell me now or you can tell us later. So I think the team is Trudy, Sherry, Nia, and myself, and then we'll be having additional staff get involved as needed.
Okay, and just a bit of background for folks. The two things is that in 2012, they had had like an inaugural ball for the council inauguration, and it was a big, you know, I can't remember what it was called at that time, but the Crown ballroom food, the whole shebang. And it was when Russ became council president, we agreed it was kind of over the top and it was an expensive endeavor. Mm-hmm. And so switched to a format where it was during the daytime. We wanted to make sure it was still important and elevated, and so the Ordway really has an elegant feel. We push out the reception onto the lobby floor, and it really is a beautiful event, but it is much more modest, and I think it gives the council members an opportunity to, especially new people, right? I remember in 2012, I didn't move one step. I just sat in the same spot, and it was really overwhelming. And so I think it's an opportunity for people to mingle a little bit in an earlier setting. And so we made that switch, and we decided to stick with it because 2016 was so successful, and it really was a nice event. But then the other thing is relating to calendar. In 2019, Christmas Day is on Wednesday. New Year's Day is on a Wednesday. And we want to swear in people as soon as we can after the new year, but we thought that the second or the third would be hard to get people to turn out for, which is why we settled on the date of the 7th and would be in advance of the first meeting of the year. So for people who are planning their life, that's a long stretch without a meeting. That's the 18th to the 7th. So, Ms. Moore.
Council President Brian Mullen, council members, the date will be contingent on the council passing the charter amendment that will be coming before you in April, which allows the council members to cancel a meeting within at least 90 days before. So as long as that charter amendment is passed, then we can proceed with having the 7th as your inauguration date.
Right, and this is a rare occasion where we would cancel two back-to-back meetings, but with the charter written the way it is, we are not allowed to do that. And this gives us the ability to do it with a 90-day notice and with a supermajority vote?
Yes.
So it isn't something that can just happen willy-nilly. It would have, we would have to, there'd have to be good cause for it. And I think if, for no other reason between the 25th and the 20, and the 1st this year, that we would have a problem with quorum. So a meeting, we could hold a meeting, but we couldn't vote anyway. So, Ms. Anker.
Thank you. I appreciate the background on why the ball went away. There aren't enough opportunities to dress up in formal wear anymore, so I do mourn it for that reason, but I think it's a much better use of public dollars. But from just for the 4:30 timeframe, I don't, maybe it was like this in 2016 too, but from the perspective of new folks coming in and having their supporters come and see them and that sort of thing, it seems early in the day. It's like in the middle of the workday. So for some folks, so is that a cost thing too, or is that always the time we've done it as opposed to like 5:30?
Is there any history on that?
I believe it was to make it convenient for people while they're still downtown, still in the area, and still have a chance to continue on with their evening.
I mean, the time is open. I think there's never a good time. There's never a right time. You know, there's always people who don't work an 8-to-5 schedule anymore. It's all over the board. So I do think that given that what we start see turnout for the inauguration tends to be a lot of it is supporters of folks who are newly elected, and then a lot of folks that work in downtown or capital area. But if we want to look at a different time, the Ordway has been kind enough to contribute the space to us, not the food or staffing time, but just the space itself. And I think that we chose the Tuesday because there wasn't an event that evening. So there's probably some flexibility. But it's always a challenge, you know, what's the right time? And if it's too late, then do we lose the people that were downtown that had a kid event or what have you? So, but we can certainly, as we're looking through the details, I know Holly mentioned, you know, do we want to go to the effort of doing name tags, which I kind of think we do? Do we want to, last time we had a bunch of printed invitations that were pretty expensive that most of them didn't get sent out. And most of us do electronic invitations these days too. So just, you know, kind of modernizing our event. But also I think I do want to make sure that it's elevated and special because it's, as we all know, it's no small act to win an election. So we want to make sure that the public, the supporters, and the people that we'll be working with get to celebrate that and take that pause, that moment to acknowledge the work that's gone into it. So we'll continue on some of those details, but that is for blocking out calendars and planning the future should we, again, be here next January. You'll want that on your cal.
Council President, one last thing. We will have a resolution that will come before you, giving Kristen and those of us working on the committee the power to be able to accept money on behalf of the inauguration.
Right, so. And I do want to make a small correction. When you said that we want to, for a good use of public dollars, and actually we do private fundraising for this event, so
it's
our time. It's the time that we put into it. Well, just
good,
to be clear.
Good correction.
Yep. So we will be there will be fundraising going on, and we might be hit up individually. So. Which is fun. We like that. All right, it's great. Well, thanks for the update on that. And I think it's just good to kind of get an understanding of what the reasoning and rationale is behind our decision making so far and the details to follow. Okay, great. Item 3, is this me? Are you ready on this one? Do you want to start? I can start. Okay, so this I'm resurrecting in an old conversation about public comments and legislative files. And at least from my perspective, and Katie just walked in too, so from Katie's perspective, we've had some conversations about what is part of the public record and when does it become part of the public record. And the biggest challenge I think all of us have experienced in the past as I mean, most recently in the past 6 weeks, are comments coming in about sustainable to-go packaging, comments coming in about the Twin Cities German Immersion School, and at what point do they start needing to be part of the public record? When you get a form email sent to you by 800 people, do those all need to be a public record? What if they're not from St. Paul? And these kind of, we have sort of challenges managing all that incoming information, especially because some things come to every office. Some things come to one office intended to be for every office, and it is a burden on our administrative staff. And one of the conversations that we've had in the past is that when, and I'll just use my own office as an example, when my constituents contact me, they may not realize that their email is going to be part of the public record. They may be colloquial. They may be more strident than they would be if they knew it was going to be in the public record. They may not want their street address and house number included in their email. So it kind of comes to us, and we're assuming that it is intended for the public record, and that's sort of been our default. So we had toyed around a bit last year with a notion that that messages that come to us that we would have an automatic reply that went to everybody that said, you know, thank, in addition to however else we wanted to contact them individually, but that said, you know, thank you for your email involving this thing, whatever the number is on the file. If you would like this to be part of the public record, you know, go to this link and input it yourself. And that way, the person can put in the required fields. I think it would reduce any sort of anonymous inputs because there'd have to be some, you know, required fields for that, basically affirming that they want it to be part of the public record rather than defaulting that they want it to be part of the public record. And I think that's particularly relevant with these automated email, you know, activations where we just get so many of them, and people's effort that went into sending them to us was as simple as writing. You know, where they lived, and then it automatically generated out to us. I mean, I don't even know how to answer those. I don't know if any of you are struggling with that as well. I know one of the news stations sends them out to us, and there's no address from the constituent or no way to contact them back. So you just have that input. So but on the other hand, we don't want to exclude information that should be part of the public record. So we're trying to figure out a way to manage that so that everybody has a consistent message about how to get your information inputted if you want it inputted. And again, my feeling is that I have some concerns about the default being that it just goes into the public record. And then I also just want to acknowledge that because of the automation of these processes, the amount of work that has landed on Katie's lap and our executive assistants it's unbelievable. Just having to go through them, figure out who, you know, did they come to all of us? Did they come to some of us, as I was saying before? And then putting them in. And I don't know about you, but I can't digest 800 emails in the public record if they're all saying the exact same thing and it's more like a petition and email form. So anyways, this is just some challenges, and I would be curious to hear what my colleagues think about this. We had this discussion last year, and I think there was some agreement that we needed to modernize our processes, but we didn't come to a full agreement. I think we stopped short of acting. So I can't remember what we were in the middle of, but there was too many things happening all at once again, and it was just a little overwhelming. So I think that's the background on that. Ms. Prince?
Do we have any examples of what other cities are doing in this way? I'd be interested in looking at other models. It's really important to me that we do as much as we can, especially if people are intending it to be part of the public record, to make it available. And I noticed another thing that we do is we do bundle comments. And, you know, they go into the public record as comments relating or emails about whatever the issue is. So we are doing some of that, right?
Council President Brenmall and Councilmember Prince, yes, we are. It's the compiling them because they come from so many different places. We've got the contact council email on your homepage. We have people that have figured out what our group emails are for the council offices. You know, we've got the wards 1 through 7 and the council as a whole. you're receiving them to your individual emails separately, to your ward emails. The department might receive them. So we're getting them from all of these different areas. A lot of times they're duplicates.
Right.
And it takes a lot of work to try to figure out if they are duplicates. And is it fair to give someone twice the, you know, recognition and someone else, you know, just once? That's where some of these issues are coming in. There's so many variables.
But we do have examples. Like, we did some research into what other cities were doing.
And we have done that.
We're unusual.
I haven't checked on the backside as to if the council members are all getting those information, but I have looked at many agendas, and we are very unusual having all of our comments on there. I did another quick search yesterday just to, you know, kind of check some more cities and stuff, and I found one city that had public comments on it, and they would have, like, one letter here, maybe one comment there. Nothing of the volume that we have.
And we have, in our Legistar system, we have the ability for somebody to go to the item and literally input something into the public record.
Yep. So we have an example up on the screen right here from a meeting that we had in December. And this is a feature that we turned on probably about a year and a half ago, and we didn't advertise it at all. And we had some big issues where we were kind of surprised. We'd go in and look, and wow, we had 30 comments on something. I think there was a zoning on Marshall had something that was affecting a hair salon or something, and they found it, and a bunch of their customers went in. So what you would do is you would go to the calendar page, just where you find the agendas, but instead of clicking on agenda, you click on meeting details. That would bring you to this page, mm-hmm. and then you'll see at the top where it shows public comments.
This is what it looks like.
If we were looking at today's agenda, there would be another link in there. I guess add new comment is still on there.
Mm-hmm.
So they just click on add a new comment. They do need to register an account, have an account for it, and then they're able to submit their comments on whichever agenda item they want, or all of them if it's inclusive of all.
And the thing is that if you have to register an account or put in some fields that say who you are, then at least there's some accountability in terms of who is making the public comment, because we get emails that are just anonymous or emails that are signed, you know, Angry Larry or whatever, and we don't know where they live, we don't know if they're a real person. So in this format, you can see there's more accountability as far as if you're taking that input. I mean, the newspaper doesn't take anonymous editorials either.
Go ahead. Another feature of it is you also have to prove you're a person and not a robot, so that we wouldn't be, right, you know, attacked through a virus.
Ms. Anker.
Thank you. And I assume once you've registered, you just have a username and password or something each time. It's not like every time you need to re-enter that information. It's actually
correct,
a shortcut in the long run. I really appreciate knowing that we have that. Mm-hmm. I have not ever seen that feature or the public comments that have been getting put in there, so I'm glad to know about that. This is actually what I was going to say, was that I really appreciate Council President Brenmoen bringing this forward, because I do think we need to find a way that is more efficient. I have been concerned about the duplication, and when I just forward to Katie, I'm like, God, Katie, like, what are you getting in your inbox? But I wanted to make sure there was a way for people to do that publicly, because what I would be worried about would be, for example, somebody doing one of those, like, saying yes to the mass emails and being told, this will go into the public record, because when you email your council member, that's all public information, because it is, but it might not go on the public record.
But it isn't.
Actually, isn't.
So if someone requested that, they would.
So, Sherry, do you want to explain that?
The way the state statute reads is correspondence that's sent to an elected official is private unless it is released by one party or the other. So it actually is. If a constituent emails you, you can choose to make it public, but you don't have to. Or they can choose to make it public.
But a Freedom of Information request on everything about billing residents directly, I wouldn't be required to release that.
No.
It's kind of like attorney-client privilege. It's like it's not, but it just falls into that same. But you can release it if you want to, or they can release it if they want to. But just because a constituent sent you an email, it's not. It's actually a rare exception and is not public.
It's something we've taken a closer look at in recent years.
Oh, okay. Hmm. Well, that's also new. So this is a good meeting. But I guess the second point then is just. If someone thought that when they were submitting one of those like mass surveys, they were getting their comments into the public record, and if you, to your point, you can't respond to them because it's from a mass thing and say, here's how you get it into the public record, you couldn't write back to that and give them the link, for example, then I think it would that would be fine as long as there was a way for them to go online and do that and know to do that on their own. So I'm glad to know that we have this in Legistar, and I'm comfortable with that suggestion of just moving to some sort of form that's linked to that.
Yeah, and we do need to hammer out details if we wanted to move forward. But my thought was there that in part in your response to an email, an advocacy email, obviously one that's attached to a file number, because then that's when it becomes part of the record question. Is this is item number blah de blah. If you would like this to be in the public record, these are the steps you need to take. And I just think that that extra step is not unreasonable. As long as it's this simple, to me, in a lot of ways, it's easier to read this and digest this than 800 emails that I can't, there was one, I think, set of a while back that came in that they had a different PS. The letter was the same, but the PS was different. So it's, and it's like, we want to read it. We want the information, but this format is a lot more, easy to interpret. Ms. Nelson.
I would just like to figure out, I appreciate this conversation too, because I think we need to be smart and efficient and create a lot of ways that are easy for people to comment, but also make sure it gets recorded. And, I think online organizing is important, and it's a way to reach a lot of people. And, if you're just trying to demonstrate that, 500 people support something, I think that's in and of itself fine. We have to figure out how to adapt our system to receive things like that, because my understanding right now is if there is some kind of action alert that goes out, that our staff is, manually inputting all of them or something, which I don't know. If there's a system way to address that isn't about categorically excluding that type of submission, I'd be really interested to figure that out. Because I do think, when you're working as an advocate to build a base of folks across the community and then you want to efficiently communicate and you have new tools to do that, but then the city tools aren't set up to receive it, it feels like we're punishing people using new forms of organizing to try to get their comments into us. But I don't think it's similarly reasonable to have one person have to sit and, manually read them all and put them in. So I don't know what it looks like on the back end either. I guess I care about those petition type things still getting registered somehow, even if it's that they all go in there as a one line thing that's petition that agrees to vote yes or for X, and then it goes in
But could that responsibility be on the petitioner or the emailer? I think if the word, to the point about online organizing, if you're trying to mobilize people to do something, you can say, go to this link, fill it in, and it would populate this form.
Potentially, I think as long as it's basically the same function where they can, what I don't understand right now and what I would want to understand better is there a way to help people mass access the link to then be able to put their same comment in? I guess, yeah. And figuring out what it looks like on the user end so that we don't take away people's ability to comment in bulk, because I actually think what I actually think is more aggravating is when a lot of people are writing multiple long things that are actually all the same position, and then we have to sift and make through that. I think it's nice when people just, are putting out 500 of us all support this one thing, and that's their same message. It's just how do we keep a head count? And so that's the piece that, do you know what I mean?
Yep.
Everyone can express themselves in whatever form they want, but there's another form of work that is, 600 unique individualized emails, but they're not clearly saying for, against, or something else, and then we sift through that too. So there's different types of stuff we have to sift through. I don't know that I'm even disagreeing with anything you're saying. I'm just sort of thinking through this myself, because the more easy we can make it, the better, I think, is just my overall point.
And I guess the question is, at what point I think we want to, at what point, there's this kind of fine line between, like, I think if you're mobilizing people to contact your council member so that we see, like, 500 people are feel strong about this, so has that impact been made without inputting 500 of the replicated emails into a public record? You know, like, there could be is there some way to say we, to summarize that? Because there, at a certain point, I'm afraid that with then the public record is so full of duplication and easily replicated email messages that the individual crafted things that are outside the scope of that email get lost. You know, so there's that conundrum too.
Well, under the system, everybody who's sending us an email, whether it's a form email or not, could go into Legistar and have their name in the system taking a position on the issue. So it wouldn't prevent individuals who are part of a group of 500 people sending form emails from all using this. You know, obviously the other thing we have to think about, because when I look at, you know, my side of town, there are a lot of people who would not be able to figure out how to, who may not have computers to begin with. So I'm assuming when we get a handwritten letter or anything like that, that we can still submit those to become part of the record.
I think that, I absolutely think so. Yeah. I mean, I think when people write a letter, there is, I think that the number of those are still, they're fairly contained.
Right, right, they are.
This is really about the proliferation of electronic mobilizing and organizing, and it's great. But I think that the way that the public hearing, the public comments are set up doesn't mesh with that kind of mass mobilizing. So how do we get how do we get that into the public record in a way that's meaningful? And I do, like, to Ms. Prince's point, if people want to take that extra step of just logging in, it is an extra step, but if they want it in the public record, we're asking people to take the effort to come down here and testify in person or handwrite a letter. Asking them to type their name into a form doesn't seem like a huge barrier. Mm-hmm. And I don't know the answer, if it was easy, but I'm concerned. The flip side is I'm concerned that what's happening is we're getting a lot of information isn't going into the public record because we're so inundated by it. And again, I think what's to go is, as the most recent example, we were trying to tell the different executive assistants to send Katie contacts from your ward. But then people were contacting us from New Brighton and Roseville, and who is responsible for hooking the Roseville ones into the public record. And, you know, so just managing it is just out of hand. Ms. Moore.
Councilor Brenmo and council members, another concern of ours is when we start getting emails, or you all start getting emails about issues that aren't on an agenda yet and aren't going to be possibly for months. Mm-hmm. And so what do we do with those? I mean, we oftentimes don't know what's coming down as staff, you know, the things that are happening in the neighborhoods. We don't always know about it. And so all of a sudden we'll get a bunch of emails on rubber ducks. We didn't know anything was going with rubber ducks. Do we keep them? What do we do with them? So this would be a solution for that also, that once it's on an agenda, then that's when the public comment would start on it.
So I think it's important. You had, Ms. Nelson, you had something to add.
I forgot it because now I'm thinking about this. So come back.
Think about rubber ducks.
Rubber ducks.
Mr. Tull.
Yeah, thank you. So, Sherry, is there a way that we could compress the files? So, for example, we don't lose any merits. If we got 500 email coming in about the same issue, we can compress that into a zip file so we have that as public record, and then we can create a heading with that zip file so that we can store that at the same time.
I want to answer that question, but I also think, like, so what do you do about an email that comes to all of us that's from Larry? I mean, where is it from? How do we log it in? Is it a duplicate of somebody else? You know, because we can put them all. I mean, I think that we could have a bucket that we put all, like, petition type of emails from. But I'm just, I'm also just thinking about when it's so simple to put it in like that, you could send in the email 10 times.
Cool. Okay. So is there, I know there's a way and, technically, can we filter out if it's sent to all of us, then we create a rule that says this email then goes to a different email that then we can later classify that and put it somewhere else so that we don't have to, as council member, duplicate that 5 times or 7 times, right? So, if it's sent, it could tell that it's written to all of us. I know that we could do this technically, but is that something that would be a solution?
I do. I think what I was hearing Ms. Moore say earlier is that some emails come into council, to the council members. Some come into city council, so they come to all of us. There's one that's like council complaints or something.
Contact council.
Contact council, and then ones that come to Ward 1, Ward 2, Ward 3, Ward 4, to all of us, but it's the same message. So it isn't, and it's from Larry, so who knows where they're from. So I think that they come in different ways, which also adds, I think you can definitely push things that come from, to contact council all into one bucket. But the question is the ones where we can't actually tell if they're going to all of us or a couple of us. Those are things that I think we should dig into. Ms. Prince?
We are required to keep things for 6 months, aren't we? Our emails are, if it's a correspondence, we shouldn't be deleting it anyway.
That is correct. You are required, but you're not required to put it as part of the council packet.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm really glad that we clarified that with the group here, because it is an unusual occurrence. And I believe it goes back to what I was saying in the beginning. There are people who I represent who would contact me just to say, this is the worst thing I've ever heard, by the way, and not expect it to be part of the public record because they're a friend or so just to be clear that some of that input is for us, not for public. Ms. Nelson?
I remember my comment. So it's more of a additional thing that I think about is one chunk of the sorting appears to just be, is this even a St. Paul resident or not? And when I was working in a congressional office, there's a common system used where you punch in your zip code, and then if you are a constituent from that congressional district, it allows you to access the online system where you can, make a meeting request or submit a comment to them. But it actually asks you to pre-filter, whether or not you're of that constituency. And I don't, again, this is here's what would be nice. I don't know what it takes on the back end, but, having everything on email itself is one logistical challenge to sort through. And then within that is that there's no clean filtering system that's just I'm getting emailed from, a person who lives in Ward 2 or Ward 4 or Ward 1 versus Falcon Heights. There's no way to do that, and people just email whatever, and they don't write where they're emailing from, and they claim they're our constituents, and then how do we – so, it's complicated, and if there were a way to – move things off email and set in a thing that requires you to either put your comment in and identify your zip code so we can distinguish whether or not you're a St. Paul resident on a voting matter, and then have a separate category where if you can still submit a comment but it's not as part of the, I don't know, we have to figure out a better systems that sort things like that, because that's another layer that is hard to parse through over email, and I've certainly gotten plenty of just random notes my way where I'm I don't really know where physically or electronically this is coming from. So
I think the proposal, though, is to be able to say back affirmatively to people, thank you for sharing this. We really appreciate and we'll want to have your feedback. And I read this, so thank you. If you'd like to have this part of the formal public record, here's the steps you have to take. And it's basically, again, sort of elevating it to the next level. It's not some casual thing that you just said. Because why is the casual email that came into me more important or weighted more heavily than the person who walked up to me at a restaurant and said the same thing? So it's if you want to formalize this, here's the steps you need to take, and we can set this up. Mm-hmm. So you have to put in, let's say you have to put in your name and your address and your zip code, but you can also, or whatever.
I'm not sure if we can or not do that.
I don't know either, but if we set it up so that we have some way to to understand where the person is, we also don't have to publish that outward. That can be something where you have to fill it in order to apply your or to make your comments, but that it's not, this is where I live and come visit anytime. So I think that's setting up the forum in a way. But I guess what I'm saying is, like, the, you know, they're making a public comment, whether it's electronic or in person, requiring one extra step of formality to me seems appropriate. Ms. Naker.
Thank you. I hate to suggest this, but I think there is enough here and it's a meaty enough topic that maybe it is sort of a subcommittee.
Our staff can work on it.
But, you know, for folks who feel strongly about, like, what should be incorporated into that policy. But I do think a formal policy would be helpful because what Councilmember Prince brought up, I mean, I actually think the letters we get, unlike the emails we get, tend to be written, like, as though they want them to be on the public. But, you know, those are really well phrased. They've taken time. They've mailed them in.
They use cursive.
They often. or the typed formal form ones, you know. And I'm like, I assume that this was received by everybody. I assume someone's putting it in the record. But, like, those. So us having a policy on what we do with mail, what we do with emails, what the template is we send back, I think we could share that with advocacy organizations and make it really public when we pass this policy.
Yeah.
Like, this is how you should online advocate to the council.
How you become part of the formal public record.
How you become part of, right. I mean, right, if you want.
Because you can advocate to me any way you want.
That's a good point. And then issues that aren't on the agenda. Like, that would be another category of, like, things you want to share. Here's how to do them when they haven't yet come. I don't know. It does seem like a written thing that we could all then follow would be.
And once they become formalized because they're on the agenda, then there's we can have that, black statement that's like, this is how you get it in the public record. Mm-hmm. So if we can, I mean, I think that you've got some feedback. I mean, right now we're just in the throes of, like, inundation of several topics. And my concern is just that we're missing some of the input from people because it's hard to know how to manage it. And also, I just want to make sure that we're not publishing things that people didn't intend to be published. Because there are sometimes people are very passionate, things are personal. So just kind of managing that. And again, we expect people to come all the way down here, go through a metal detector, sit in who knows how long of a public hearing to make their statement if they're coming in person. So it seems like just an additional step to make sure that they're formalizing their desires for something to be on a public record is reasonable. But I think we need to figure this out, like, ASAP. This is, can't just keep get bumbling down the road. So if we can maybe get a follow-up at our next org committee of a proposal of how we can move forward and what the capacity of our online system is for managing public formal comment, that would be great.
And I would like us to do maybe a little bit more research. I think there are some First Amendment advocates, watchdog groups that are out there that will be looking at what we're doing here. So I want to be able to connect with some of our local activists in that area just to kind of get them in on the front end so we're not fighting about this on the back end. And this is all publicly available, right?
Mm-hmm.
Once somebody...
It's a public website.
Okay. Great.
I appreciate that comment, too, because I feel like at the end of the day, what we're trying to do is make sure people are heard. And the way that our current system is set up, there's no policy or standard for managing the way that communication is coming to us in a modern manner. And so there's possibility that things are getting missed or that people have expectations that aren't being met. So just to really button it down and make sure that it's clear, it gets to that point. And so to work in concert with those folks in the beginning and understand that our goal is not to not hear from people, but it's to make sure we are hearing from people and appropriately. Ms. Nelson?
Yeah, I mean, I echo that, and I appreciate this discussion. I think of all the ways that, from, like, the everyday user standpoint, people are communicating with us but not aware that it isn't actually as formal as, like, emails that we're then sifting through. And, like, I've had constituents text me just to say, here's my opinion on this thing. And it's completely reasonable for a constituent to believe I'm contacting my council member directly, whether I'm emailing them, which is apparently, like, privileged and confidential under statute, or I'm texting them, or I'm calling them, or when I see them and passing out in the community, I'm saying something to them. And that's part of the body of input that we're, you know, trying to document. And part of representative democracy is just that we intake all that and we carry it to the table, but I want to make sure that at least the systems where we were formally getting stuff are, you know, clean and easy and simple and tight, and then we figure out what to do with everything else. But more people contacting us is good. I'm game to figure out how to make it as open as possible and also simple. So
right.
I hear you.
But like, yeah, like, yeah. What do you do with those texts?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Super small.
Yeah, Ms. Baker.
Super small final point,
which is important.
If we do shift more towards this Legistar format, though, I think it'd be really important. I'm like looking at it myself with today's agenda, mm-hmm. To be able to see the comments in the meeting agenda that are there.
And
is that?
That is something that we have been doing. You may have noticed we do run a spreadsheet, and Katie attaches them as comments. They're probably blending in with the other comments that you're receiving them.
So there's an attachment on, like, Sustainable to Go, for example, today. That 2019 comment would be just the screenshot. No.
Well, we're not compiling them from previous agendas. So if on this agenda we have...
Right. Like, I saw today there's a comment in the meeting details.
Oh, that must be new.
But on the agenda, then I don't see it. And what I don't want to have happen is for us to be flipping back and forth between the agenda and a separate document.
When I checked this morning, we didn't have any before the meeting, so maybe that one just came in.
Yeah. Okay.
And that would be another issue. At what point is our cutoff to add these?
Well, it could be a change in our practice where, you know, as we prepare for our meetings on Tuesday and Wednesday, that we look at our agenda and then also make sure that there's no comments that have come in. I mean, we're looking at it electronically for the most part, but that could just be a change in our practice if it becomes, I mean, for the most part, people aren't using the comment feature.
Right.
So
now,
if we haven't seen it, that's because this particular issue, people haven't figured that out. And to be clear, it was launched quietly to test it. And with the idea of bringing it forward when we finalize this decision. So if you think of something later, this is not easy, or we would have already figured it out, and I think we all have, it seems like we are in agreement. We can follow up with folks on, like, what other cities do. We did contact Roseville, Maplewood, Minneapolis to find out, like, what their policies are, and we are very unusual. So I think for the most part, it's like if it's not part of the form, if they're not formally put into the record, it's not part of the public record. So it doesn't mean that they're doing it better. It just means that we're unusual.
Everyone should just tweet at you. That's the new system.
That's a way to do it.
Yep.
Tweet on
for the
brothers and sisters.
Hey, Brenda.
okay, great. Well, I appreciate the conversation here, and I think it's the conversation is ripe. It's been quite a week with between the issues that are coming before us and issues that aren't, the input that we've been getting. So just managing it and making sure that we're doing right by our constituents is important. So thank you for that, and we'll look forward to a magic silver bullet that can solve this all and make Katie's life better, right? Yes. She, like, hates layovers because it means one more week.
Oh.
Okay, great. Thank you very much for that. All right, so then we've moved on to number four, updates on committees, boards, and activities from the council. Does anyone have exciting news from their... Ms. Prince.
I'm happy to start. The Gold Line Bus Rapid Transit project is moving rapidly forward. We're submitting our final budget, and so that's very exciting. Community Action Programs of Ramsey and Washington County. All of my colleagues are invited on March 18th to a community gathering after our monthly board meeting, and I believe you all received invitations about that. But I think the significant thing about what CAP is doing right now is that we are planning to partner with the Mayor's Office of Financial Empowerment so that we can link people and services in a meaningful way to help Munir, who is our new director of that program. Visit St. Paul. I am on that board with council members Tolbert and Naker, and we had a very interesting meeting yesterday about the future of the River Center parking ramp. I don't know that there's a lot to report at this point. unless one of you wants to follow up on that. The Minnesota High Speed Rail Commission is changing its name to Great River Rail because the support for high speed rail in Wisconsin does not currently exist, but support for a second train does exist, and so that's where we're putting all of our efforts right now, is a second daily train to Chicago. Kasim and I are now going to be on the dispatch board. I'm not sure if anyone else is on it. Are you, Rebecca?
Yes. Yep.
And I've been on it for at least a quarter, I think, and have received no notification of a meeting. So,
on that point, that we did hear from the Ramsey County Dispatch, and they are scheduling this year's meetings, and they will follow up with us when they have them set. Because what we asked them was, what is your meeting schedule before we put Mr. Busuri on it? Because we're like, well, what if he can't go? And they're like, oh, we'll just, that's great, send him our way, and as soon as we get our meeting schedule set up, we'll let you know. I think it's important. Mr. Bostrom was the chair, and so I've encouraged Ms. Prince to maybe elbow her way in and become the next chair, just because St. Paul should have a strong position at the dispatch. But also, we are pushing the organization to try to limit the meetings that they have that are just informational, mm-hmm. and if they can, to send an email out instead of having people come mm-hmm. together to share a PowerPoint of information.
And meet in St. Paul.
And try to meet in St. Paul sometimes. So we are leaning on them a little bit because there's been feedback that folks have to drive out to the far throes of Ramsey County for meetings, usually at the end of a work day, and that it's not things we vote on, but rather information. So mm-hmm. There are not meetings set yet, but we should hear from them shortly, and then you should take charge.
Very good. And then my last one is, I'm the city's representative on the Juvenile Detention Alternatives Initiative, and that is just a great place to keep up with all the ways in which we are supporting juveniles who end up in the criminal justice system in many, many ways other than through detention. And I am really impressed with the level of the size of the community voice in that process. It's a great group of people. I always learn a lot at those meetings, and I'm happy to follow up on that anytime. But I think that's all of
it. I think I'm also joining you on the JDAI.
JDAI.
Yes, trying initiative in the east side and probably working with NACER on Safe Neighborhood Project, where police, social workers, and youth workers go together at troubled houses to make sure that crime stops at there, and it doesn't continue, and we give the resources that they need.
Oh, very good.
Great. Do you have other updates?
No, that's it.
Okay. Other reports in from commissions or boards? Mr. Chow.
Thank you, Council President. So I'm on the Twin City Land Bank, and we continue to do our work there. We broker, help negotiate, purchase. We land bank, we hold property. We also do creative financing and lending, and all in the objective of creating more affordable housing in the surrounding county, so not just in Ramsey County, but we continue to do that work. The other board I'm on is on the St. Paul Port Authority with Councilmember Mitra. And just a couple of highlights that we've done in 2018 up to this point. We really was intentional about creating our equity statement and then putting all of our staff to go through training so that they can operate out of a equity lens. So that's something that hasn't been done. And then we're also trying to diversify our workforce. A couple of highlights are the Beacon Bluff. We continue to do that work. And so, for example, here, the economic impact is about $119 million on the east side. $68 million of that is for labor income. So that comes down to about annual job or average job pays about excuse me, $68,000 a year. In 2018, we have helped created about 615 jobs, and our projected for 2022 is 930 jobs. And so this is really important that we all work together with the council to preserve more industrial land and if possible create more industrial land. These are land that does create a high-paying job in the city of St. Paul, and that really strengthen, you know, across the city. So.
Great. Ms. Nelson.
Great. I'd love to share updates on the Ramsey County Census Complete Count effort. So I'm really proud to be co-chairing the Ramsey County Complete Count Committee on behalf of St. Paul, working with Ramsey County Commissioner Victoria Reinhart. And our group has been meeting to basically convene community partners and create a work plan for leading the 2020 census effort, starting at a high level and doing community mapping to understand where are all the groups and the quote-unquote hard-to-count groups of folks that are tougher to reach or that we need more resources to make sure we can count, and then all the way down to, you know, from a almost campaign standpoint, like a nonpartisan campaign standpoint, how do we then support and hire for, you know, the federally managed parts of it, which are all the survey takers and all the people who manage the survey takers and how they connect with local organizations to leverage just community infrastructure to get to everybody. And as part of that, we're really closely tracking the federal court decision about citizenship on the census, something that's being decided and fought about right now, which is obviously, if it went through, would be very discouraging and would politicize a very unpolitical, long-standing, traditional tool that is needed. There are work groups that have formed to strategize about how to better reach different constituencies. One of the, you know, top undercounted groups of people are renters and folks who rent because of people moving around. That correlates with race, it correlates with income, and so there's work groups formed to try to help people in different census tracts and map where are we undercounted and how can we boost those numbers. So all that work is happening with about 40 to 50 community organizations who send representatives to the committee meetings, and I just want to talk about it every chance I get because at a certain point we're going to activate this apparatus to make sure we can help count everyone and lean on our colleagues and people who are public leaders with platforms to essentially build a message around the census that we're determined to be counted no matter what. This isn't about hiding from the census or, you know, being afraid of, you know, recent events in federal government that have made people anxious about things like the census. It's saying our communities deserve the billions of dollars in federal investment that are tied to accurate count. We deserve accurate count. We're going to work to be diligent about that and be inclusive and reach everyone. So that's the work going on at the Census Committee. And the next one is April 25th at 5:30 p.m. The location's being decided. But talk to me if you want to know more info. I'd be happy to share that. Thanks.
Great. Ms. Baker.
Thank you. Well, first of all, the council work group that I'm co-chairing with Councilmember Prince on the restoring the performance audit function to the council is going to have our first meeting next Thursday, March 14th at 4 p.m. So that's happening. Council President Brenmoen and I and Councilmember Prince attended this public sector convening on homelessness. This is the group that the state is bringing together to talk about homelessness as a regional problem with hopefully a regional solution. It was a great meeting. There were probably 40 elected officials from all over the metro area, not just Hennepin and Ramsey counties. And the Commissioner Ho did an amazing job keeping everybody on track and with their mouths relatively shut for, you know, 90 of the 120 minutes. And then, unfortunately, we got to the very end of the meeting and things sort of fell apart. So we didn't quite have the time to get to what specific steps we were going to take. But a smaller group of that 40 is coming together, I think, March 20th to figure out exactly how to get all of those jurisdictions to step up to the specific work that was outlined by a great design team process. And then finally, I just wanted to report on the work of the Downtown Alliance, which is planning some cool stuff for this summer. They are contracting with Block by Block, which is the group that does the community, or not the community, the Downtown Ambassadors Program in downtown Minneapolis through their Special Improvement District. And so we are going to have several uniformed, official-looking ambassadors for most of the workday, for most of the summer, in two sites downtown,
One of them is the Central Station, 5th and 6th sort of donut hole area, and the other one is Rice Park and Ham Plaza and sort of this area all around major transit stops, major hubs of activity. So they will be doing what they do in Minneapolis, which is greeting people, helping with wayfinding, sweeping up trash, removing gum, stuff like that, and generally providing sort of a semi-official welcoming presence on the street. And at the same time, we're going to be using about $100,000 from the Knight Foundation to do activation activities in those same areas, whether that's murals or street art or parklets or benches, just to kind of give the feel for what it would be like if we had a special services district for all of downtown with this stuff going on all the time. So that's something to look forward to.
And if people haven't had a chance to check in with Joe Spencer about the work of Downtown Alliance, do take that meeting. Yeah. I think everywhere I go, I hear people saying that they're so impressed with his leadership, his collaboration, and just his vision for downtown. And it's worth getting an update because he's making waves, so it's exciting. Anything else?
Two. I can give two quick updates. The Greater Metropolitan Workforce Board hired their executive director, Andrea Fernstein, a couple weeks ago. That board has public-private partnership from across the metro. I think every county in the metro area has a commissioner on the board, as well as members from the business community. So. But they'll be located in the Osborne 360 building, which is fantastic to have that board centered here in St. Paul.
Yeah.
And the Ramsey County Workforce Board / Workforce Solutions also hired their executive director after a long search. Ling Becker was hired. So having executive directors on both of those will be helpful in getting direction and leadership as we move forward in the workforce realm. I think they're going to be coming. We want them to come, the workforce board to come before us probably later in the year as these people, as these new executive directors get their feet under them. But I think having both of them would be very helpful to talk about how the regional plan on workforce. But excited to finally have directors in both of those.
I checked him. I think Ling Becker at Rush Lane Commission came up and said that she was really excited about the new job. And I reminded her that we would be putting her on the schedule ASAP, but also with enough time so that she has a chance to get her feet under her. She's really excited about the work.
Good.
That's cool. About it? Okay, the only update I have is with overlap here is Water Board, just kidding. We had, just a reminder, last week we talked about, or the last time the organization committee met, we did include the increased funding to the district councils. And, of course, with increased funding, we need to keep moving forward with our accountability side of that conversation and really in our role as a council, managing that backside of the budget and making sure that our district councils are performing to the standards that meet that budget is important. But we did get a report from the district councils at the end of last year, fall of last year, and we've responded to their report with a red, yellow, green document, basically things that we can do immediately, things that we can start working on, and things that are going to take a while for us to address. And we're going to have Joe Mandyka come to one of our upcoming org committee meetings and update us on where we're at with that green, yellow, red document. We have made progress on some things. I think we've stalled on other things, and we do need to keep moving those forward to keep our side of the bargain with the district council. I think Joe was originally talking about meeting with individual council members one-on-one, and I thought it'd be better to just bring them on in. We can all talk about it at once. I sometimes find that it's more helpful for me to hear other people's questions as well. So he'll be in to report back from that. And then not on a board or commission, but I just wanted to share with you all that Principal Dr. Mike McCollar was named the Principal of the Year in the state of Minnesota, and he's the principal at Washington Technology Magnet, which is just a huge honor. And I'm so proud of the work that is happening at Washington Technology Magnet. And so I'm trying to work with the mayor's office, and I'd like to do something with the council to also elevate that award because it's incredible. That's a school that we've talked about from time to time, just about the statistics, the demographics at their school, and the graduation rates, the post-secondary rates are just incredible, and with like a 95% free or reduced lunch student base. So it's incredible, and he's a real prince. So I just thought that was a huge honor and worth mentioning to folks here, and we will do something in the coming months to make sure we honor that. And I'd like to do something where the students are also present and not just something where we're huddled away here at the council chambers, because it's really a big deal. So, Ms. Nacker.
Thank you. Also not any particular board or committee, but I just wanted to check back on our schedule for upcoming presentations. I know Holly sent out follow-up a couple weeks ago, and particularly I just wanted to know when our first housing update is going to be, because I know a lot of us are chomping at the bit to hear more about the housing plan, the plan for the Affordable Housing Trust Fund. I thought we had asked Kayla to come to us in March, but I don't see it on any of our March agendas.
I think she was going to come to the
council.
HRA.
Okay.
Councilmember Brenmo and Councilmember Nacker, I've been in contact with Kristen Guild, and she's working with Chair Tolbert to schedule those. I've offered any assistance once she's worked with Chair Tolbert.
Okay.
Great. Okay, so that's why it's not on that list.
Got it.
All right. Anything else to come before us here this morning? That's so much for our quick meeting, but I think this was a great conversation, really gave us some good direction, and it's incredible to hear what people are doing on their commissions and board and committees. We're just all over the place, and not to mention other things that are somewhat distracting at these busy months. So thank you for the updates, and we will adjourn until...